It's Rosie on the house, at your house. An Arizona Saturday morning tradition for Arizona homeowners. Privileged, humbled, and honored to be a part of your weekend for the last 29 years. Where we do what we can to take away the anxieties, fears, and worries you might have about your house, home, castle, or cabin. Whatever it is you're trying to tackle, we're here for you every single Saturday morning. 7 o'clock hour, we talk about whatever we want. We have a lot of fun. It's kind of like our Arizona, it pretty much focuses on Arizona. Romy's called it the, what did you call it, Arizona people?
People, places, and things.
Things. Okay, so I call it the Arizona Magazine Hour. But then when we bring in Dr. Sky, then we leave Arizona and no telling where he takes us, right? So 7 o'clock is always a lot of fun. It's really just you dropping in on the Romeros, and it's like we're at the house having a cup of coffee, talking around the breakfast room table.
I was talking to a gentleman by the name of Carrie, another one of those individuals with, like Rosie,
yes.
a feminine son
of the first name. Can go either way.
But he runs Carrie's Pizza in Wickenburg, and we stopped in there for dinner. What night was the volleyball game? I guess it was Thursday night. And he recognized my voice, and he's like, man, I got to come over and tell you. I've loved the program for years, but that 7 o'clock hour has sent y'all over the top.
Well, we have a lot of fun with the 7 o'clock hour, so hopefully you're getting up and tuning in and catching. It's a lot of fun. 8 o'clock is our landscape and gardening outdoor living hour. 9 o'clock is the open line hour, where whatever you're trying to tackle, we encourage you to give us a ring. What did we make our way through last hour? About 9 or 10 phone calls, and took care of all kind of different kinds of topics, from scorpions to water pressure. And then in the 10 o'clock hour, we bring in our experts. We reach into our stable of building scientists and experts from across the state of Arizona, and we take one topic and we dive deep and go into great detail on it. So people tell me all the time that they save the newspaper articles and they put them in different chapters so that they can use them for future reference. They take the 10 o'clock hour and they catalog it in their podcast library under different categories, so they always know to refer to it. And now we're going to be talking about something I know most of you have tried to tackle at one time or another on your own, and we're going to bring in our good friend, the gentle giant, Don Breeze. Don, when did we join up? We met, what, about 93 or 94?
Yeah, it was fall of 93.
Yeah.
Fall of 93.
So Don and I have been good friends. We were running a remodeling company at the time, and we had decided to start our own complete in painting division. And we found Don and recruited him, and he ran our painting division at that company for a lot of years. Went out on his own, and we've recently in the last year been able to talk him into coming back and joining us at Rosie on the House Remodeling.
Yeah, and it's been like the first time where we paired up. It's been a blessing, and I'm happy to be a part of the Rosie Remodeling crew.
Well, we count it a real blessing that you've joined us. And Don, you're a local boy.
Yep, born and raised
right here in the Phoenix area, and got into the trades young, and have been in them your whole life.
Yeah, my dad, all my uncles, my grandfather were all union carpenters. Started Sun City when it was brand new.
Boy, those were the days, baby.
I'm pretty sure.
Those were the days.
Yeah, it was. John F. Long, I think, my dad said, still had his bags on at the time.
I can't go back quite that far, but I tell you what, I can remember days driving out to Maryvale, John F. Long subdivisions, or Del Webb subdivisions in Sun City. And, I mean, it was a traffic jam getting there for all the workers, because we weren't building at that time. Today, when we want to build a subdivision, we'll build a cul-de-sac out of model homes, and people will pick the Aspen model, with, the alternate bedroom being a study, and then they'll buy that home and they'll build it. Well, man, when I broke into the trades in the glory days, You didn't give anybody any options. You just built the entire subdivision, put a fence around it, and open it some Sunday morning and just let people camp out. And they had no options, no choices. They were given sold signs, and they'd open the gate, and you would literally run to the house, and the first one that could hang a sold sign on the front door, then they were escorted to the financing trailer set up on site.
Sounds like the land rush.
It was like the Oklahoma Sooners. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was just like that. And I tell you what, when we would be pouring concrete, you weren't pouring concrete in those subdivisions three houses a day. You were pouring 30 houses a day. And when the lumber drop came, it wasn't two bobtail truck packages of lumber. It was like four cargo flats of lumber. And you didn't have eight or nine carpenters on the job. You had 60 or 70. And in the cold mornings, we'd start firing the 55-gallon barrels of all the trash and the junk lumber. We all start the morning right there, warming our hands up before we had to start handling the nails. We didn't have any nail guns back then. It all had to be hand-pounded. And so there were some carpenters that would melt wax and drop their 16-penny nails.
Yep.
In the hot wax. And you could sink.
That predates me a little, but I did hear the stories.
You could sink a 16-penny nail with a pin hammer.
Yeah. You just got to grease it up a little.
Oh, man.
Thank God for nail guns.
Golly. So those were the glory days. And, man, those days, we will never do things like we did back then, that's for sure. Yeah. But so you come into the trades a little bit later than that, and did you go straight into the painting trade?
No, I actually started working with my dad and my uncles and my grandfather at the time with a company called Oakwood out in Sun City West. So I framed for about a year and a half, and I'd worked some summers through high school with them, building cabins up north and some things like that. So, and then I got into actually doing storm drain work with an uncle of mine for about a year, and then I got into the paint and drywall industry from there.
And then I'm, like I said, I met you in the early 90s where you joined us as head of our painting division. And that's really how I've known you for the most of our relationship. And so I wanted to bring you in here and thank you for carving time out of your family weekend to join us here and talk about painting, something everybody thinks they can do, right?
That's true. Some find out that they can do it, and others not so much.
When you bring a new painter on, what are some of the first basic things you're instructing them? What are you bringing them on the job and beginning to expose them to?
Well, the first thing I think that we would walk somebody new through, depending on what their history and experience is, prep work and their knowledge of just the basic fundamentals that go into pre-paint. And from there, start to test them on their paint skill levels. So brushing and rolling and walk them, you know, and if they're in a position where they're going to be leading a crew or assisting in leading a crew, usually that moves you up into a spray man category. And so we just test their mechanics and go through really a regimen of just running them through over the course of maybe 4 or 6 weeks of what they can do, capable of doing, as well as the discovery of what bad habits they may be bringing in that we want to correct.
And I want to talk through the first day that person comes on the job, because a lot of the things you're going to be asking that person, watching him do, teaching him, coaching him, are exactly the same things the homeowners need to hear as their first day. Things that they may have painted, they may have repainted their dorm, you know, before, right, or their last apartment, but so they could get their deposit money back. You know, I can remember using toothpaste to fill holes for my spackle, you know. But I want to talk through The basics on, you mentioned prep, and a lot of people will just attack a painting a room without giving it the right prep. And, you know, after about four or five of those kind of paint applications, you can really start walking in a room and realizing, you know, somebody needs to get in here and do it right. So I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about little tips of the trade. I can remember going to work for a painter. And the very first thing he taught me is where to put the paint can in the room when you're painting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's important. You don't want it, one, to be in your way, and but you want it to be, you know, in a place that's efficient. And that usually means that it's moving around with you. Yeah, it's just some of the logistics of how you're even setting the room up to prepare to paint it. Usually, you know, depending on whether or not you're doing the ceilings, that usually means, at least for the walls, that you move everything to the center of the room. And then, you know, part of the prep process is removing switch plates and HVAC registers, getting that stuff off the wall. Saves masking time, allows you to paint in behind those surfaces, because they always shift or move just a little bit, or if you change them out and they don't have the same, you know, footprint, so to speak, then you have to go get your paint can, do a little touch-up. So that saves you from that. And then the wall prep, the surface prep, so, you know, filling, you know, old nail holes, old screw holes, any texture defects, things of that nature would be things you'd want to address right off the bat.
And you bring up a good topic, the difference between wall painting and ceiling painting.
Mm-hmm. Big difference, big difference. Most people are willing to go after the walls, but they're not so...
Don, I'm going to come clean with you, buddy. I've got two projects going on at my house, and they both involve painting a ceiling. And I have put them off about 2 months because I hate painting ceilings and installing baseboard. Those are the two tasks I hate.
High and low.
High and low. Yeah. So we're going to come back with Don Breeze from Roselle and the House Remodeling and talk a little about tips of the trade and tricks when it comes to painting the inside of your house, especially the repainting.
Got a big project and a little ambition? You're in the right place. Now, back to Rosie on the House.
Rosie on the House with Don Breeze from Rosie on the House Remodeling. Considered Don not only an employee, but a good friend for 20 years. Maybe even a little more than that. 24 years. Yeah. So... we're talking painting, interior painting. If it's a project you've ever tried to tackle and you didn't get the results you were hoping for, give us a ring at 1-888-767-4348, and we'll ask you a few questions about what it was about the job you weren't happy with, and we'll give you some tips and tricks on how next time you tackle that same project, you can get a better, more professional result. So we're talking about that first day employee that comes in as for the painting company. And I want to take you through the conversations you have with that person, because it's exactly the kind of tips and tricks that we need the homeowners to hear about. You know, when I move into a rental piece of property, you know, so you close escrow and you go in there, and it's obvious someone with an untrained eye did the last paint job. You walk in the room and you start assessing the prep necessary. And I always kind of start my prep on the trim, because it's usually the stuff that's done the most sloppy.
Is that a fair assessment? That is fair, yeah.
Okay. All right. So I walk around to the baseboard and I see how much carpet is stuck up against the baseboard that wasn't taped down. And it was painted around and there's paint bleeding over the top of the carpet. You've got the little... fringe carpet pieces hanging on the baseboard and stuff like that. Is it worth saving that kind of baseboard at that point, or do you just razor blade it off and put in new stuff?
Well, usually, unless it's inordinately, you know, bad, you can just take a putty knife or a 5-in-1, something, you know, some kind of a rigid tool, and scrape the nap off of the baseboard surface as it transitions to the carpet there. And then you, of course, when you're repainting, you'd want to, you know, mask and kind of pull that carpet back a little bit, get your tape tucked in to the bottom of that baseboard there.
Here is the $64,000 question. What color tape?
What color what?
What color tape? I mean, you walk into paint
for
store.
Carpet.
Well, you walk into paint store now. It used to be beige and blue.
Yeah, well.
I mean, now they got 15 different colors of paint.
There was only yellow when I started. But yeah, there is. There's 40 colors of tape in there now. You just use white masking tape, a medium grade painter's tape. It's stickier. It's gonna. You know, if you use blue tape or frog tape or anything like that, that tape is designed with to release, and so it doesn't have a lot of adhesive on it. So you want to use something like a medium grade yellow masking tape for that.
Now, what do you like to use down there against the baseboard to pull the carpet back? Are you in a 1 inch, or do you go any more than that?
No, you just, basically you're just taking the tape and you kind of let it overhang the carpet or roughly about a quarter of an inch towards the baseboard. And then as you're, pressing down on the tape, you're tucking it in along the edge of the carpet as you press that down, you're at the bottom of the baseboard. So it's
and you're
it's
tucking that
back.
In with your little putty knife or your 5-in-1
tool? Actually, just your fingers work, and you pull the tape. You pull the tape taut, and you kind of get it, set a little bit, and then you just go along with your fingers. The problem with trying to use like a putty knife or something like that is it usually will rip or tear. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you're doing that you're on your knees, and you're leaning up against the wall, and you're ripping off about 3 feet of tape.
Yep.
And you're trying to slide it right in between the carpet and the baseboard, tuck it down in there,
yep,
nice and tight, and then bring it out. And in my experience, I don't try and get away with any less than 1 inch wide tape right there.
Yeah, usually we use something like 1.5 inches for that.
Okay.
And generally speaking, after that, you would be putting your drop cloth down, and then you're going to put a 12-inch piece of paper and tape from a masking machine or something like that to overlap that, and that's adequate protection and keeps everything in place.
So we've got the carpet pulled away from the baseboard. We've got it taped down. Now we need to kind of start scraping and cleaning that old stuff that was there. Or do you like to do that before you tape down?
No, I do it usually after the masking. That way it'll catch any of the debris.
Easy to vacuum up.
Exactly. And it vacuums up, cleans up a little better. So you would go along and you would scrape any of the carpet nap, or perhaps there's runs, things like that from the previous paint job.
There are.
So you scrape those down.
You scrape them as best you can, but even sometimes you've got to get a little palm sander and get in there and...
That's stage two. Is take the sandpaper, if it's a palm sander or a block sander, and you just go along, get everything sanded back down nice and smooth, and then after that you would go into the prep phase where you're doing some patching and some re-caulking. So.
Okay, and now in this room, this hypothetical room that we've started on, I want to paint the baseboard and the casing and the jams a different color than the wall color. Okay. So I've got the carpet taped down. We got to talk through proper drop cloth selections. When do you use 2-mil plastic, and when do you use a good linen drop cloth? But we're going to have to save that till after we get back. And so we've got all of this done, and we're getting ready to actually break out the paint. And I want to learn how to cut in that line nice and easy and even between the baseboard and the wall surface in dissimilar colors when we get back with Don Breeze of Rosie on the House Remodeling.
Are you wanting to dive into that home repair but just don't know where to begin? Let the Rosie on the House show go to work for you. Get on the line now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
That sounds good for a Saturday morning at Rosie on the House. Now, see, I can't listen to this kind of music when I'm trying to paint.
Why is that?
Don, before I break out the paintbrushes and the rollers and the paint cans, I have to go into a 3-day meditative state. Rosie, slow down. Rosie, slow down. I have to go into like a trance.
I think that music would be good to paint too. Get you moving. Yeah, and, you know, okay. Good rhythm.
I've got to listen to like some concert music, you know, some classical music, and just go with the flow, go soft, go easy. We're talking painting here with Don Breeze from Rosie on the House Remodeling, and we've talked a little bit about prepping a room, this hypothetical room that we're painting, and we've talked about how to tuck the carpet and how to tape it down. You know, another thing that's very hard is if it's a tile floor and somebody hasn't been careful, and then trying to get the paint out of that grout.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's always a mess. I hate that.
Yeah.
So when you're taping off a tile floor at the bottom of a baseboard, how do you get it in there tight enough, you know, where the grout dips below the surface of the tile? How do you get in there and really stop the paint from soaking in underneath your tape?
Well, the technique that we use, or is most commonly used by professional painters, is that you actually have just a small little edge of that tape that's actually adhering to the very, very bottom of that baseboard. And then after you get done painting it, you take a razor knife and you just lightly score right along that tape edge. When you pull the tape, it looks nice, it's straight, it's clean, and you've kept the paint from bleeding underneath that tape edge into the grout.
There's your trick tip of the day, folks. Donnie, that's great. Listen, we've got Linda on hold with a paint project she'd like to talk about. And I'm going to take Linda, and then we're going to come back and talk about this hypothetical room. I want to paint the baseboards a different color than my wall. Which do I do first, wall or baseboard? And what are the tricks for getting a really nice straight line between those two dissimilar products? But let's go to Linda first, calling from Phoenix. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'd like to know what I did wrong when I painted my door interior doors.
Okay.
When I moved into this condo that was built in the 70s, and I don't think it had been painted since then, I tried to paint them white over a little off-white color. And no matter how many coats I put on, I still see the roller marks and partly glossy and partly not. And what did I do wrong?
And Linda, are you painting these doors on the hinges in place, hung up?
Yes. Okay. Yep.
All right, Donnie, take her through what she's probably fighting.
Okay. That's a, you know, painting a door's a little level up, if you will, in technical skill or ability. But if you get a what's called a skinny mini roller, it's one of those little rollers you can get at box store or paint stores, and it's about 6 inches long. You get a small nap. And then one of the things that you want to do, despite what the manufacturer's label or the recommendation from the paint company is temper it with a little bit of water. Add a little water, or there's also a product called Floetrol. And what that does is it helps to extend the wet time of the paint, lets you work it a little longer, and it also helps the paint to do what's called level, which is smooth itself out during the drying process. And so you would apply most of the paint with that skinny mini roller, short nap, and then of course any handwork that you need to do. Let's say it's a panel door, 6-panel, 4-panel door. After you apply the paint with the roller, you'll just go ahead and run those little detail areas out with your brush real quick, and then lay the whole door surface off with the roller. And generally speaking, that will ensure that you've covered all the surfaces. The sheen will dry evenly and consistent, and you'll get rid of some of the tool markings, so that nappy look or those brush lines.
And I think sometimes a 6-panel colonist paint grade is easier to get a good paint on than a completely flat.
Yes, and that's because of the angle. Yeah,
you got all those angles working in your favor.
Breaking up your vision, your ability to see those.
But how about that slab door? I mean, and when you talk about adding a little bit of paint, I'm thinking you're taking the 1-gallon can and you're pouring it into a painter's cup or a painter's bucket, you know. And how much water are you adding to that? Are you cutting it 10-to-1? Are you cutting it 1-to-1? I mean,
well, to a gallon, I would say a fair or a good amount to start with is a cup of water.
A cup of water to a gallon.
And then you mix that up thoroughly. Or you use that product Floetrol. It's a latex extender, does the same thing. To a 5 gallon bucket of paint, you would add about half a gallon of water or half a gallon of Floetrol. And that slab door is the trickier of the two.
It is the hardest.
It is, even for professional painters. if you're applying the paint with a hand tool. Yeah.
And generally speaking, a professional painter, you would take those off the hinges, move them to a paint area in the garage, and spray them, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sprayed finish is more refined looking, and it takes away the tool marks and. But if you have to use, you know, if you're going to do it by hand, which most homeowners are, you just make sure the surface is all red. It's ready. It's free from dust and your sanding and prep work. And then cut your edges in. Get your door edges painted, your tops and bottoms. And then apply the paint to the face of the door. Get it evenly distributed, and then real quickly just go back and start on the left side and just lay the paint off from left to right or right to left.
And she's painting white on white, a slab door. Mm-hmm. Is there a harder color on a harder application than that? Maybe would a change of color make it a little easier for her?
Not necessarily. Okay. I mean, some of the pastels or the light earthens have some good coverage, but if you get into colors that have, you know, a lot, any blues, yellows, reds, those are colors that are harder to cover. So white and white's generally pretty good.
You know, all this technique and stuff is awesome, but don't you have to go back a little bit and pick the color? That is so hard to do. It made me think about it this week. I was reading Barb Kaplan's article. She wrote the Bajaro method. Your homes don't have feelings, but you do. You know, your room doesn't have feelings.
Yeah.
But that is kind of a thought process that makes it easier for you. But I can get frozen just thinking, what is the right color to pick? And Donnie, you've done things for me before, and you have a way of, I was so happy with the color you helped me pick out, but how do you find out what somebody wants? And it's like trying to figure out a hairdo somebody wants. How do you get that out of your mind or out of your customer's mind and then onto the wall with something they're happy with?
Well, and oddly enough, that's a fair comparison. You know, I think it just starts by one from the professional painter standpoint, is you listen to what the customer expectation is. And then the paint companies have developed pretty good visual tools in their trifolds and in their, color literature that allows or suggests compatible colors. And usually that's a good jumping off spot. A really good rule is never buy your paint from a color swatch. That's not the way to make the paint color decision. When you feel like you have one or two good considerations in color, you want to get a small container of that, sample container of that made up, actually apply some of it to the surface in the room where you're at, because you've got lighting issues. And color is always relative to your personal perspective. And so all that is very good legwork into choosing the color, because that lets you see the color on the surface in the room. And that is the most helpful way you can go about doing that.
Romy's the one that taught me how to use color when he painted Remy's nursery. What was that saddle brown you put on there?
You know, it was a brown that Amanda had for the baby crib. So I actually took that material and had it matched at the paint. It was a brown and a blue, and I went and had it matched at a paint shop. But and it went on great. We did brown on one, and I think blue on the other two sides. But I tell you, the most interesting thing was when I got that done, you realize just how bad the ceiling is. I'm like, wow, I can't leave it like that. It looks half done.
Go ahead.
So it was just white. So I just went to, I got a gallon of white, and I had to try it because I was so curious. But when you painted it, it went on pink. So you could see where you had painted and where you had, and it dried white. How do they do that?
That's a chemist thing.
That's fascinating.
You and I were talking. It's like tracer paint. I don't know. I've actually heard of people putting dish soap into the paint. It creates an effect that you can see wet that allows you to see where the paint actually is and where your applications have been made. And then when the paint dries, you don't see that effect anymore. But I don't know. It's really cool technology how they do that.
Well, we talked earlier in the show about two projects at my house that revolve around painting a ceiling. And I hate painting a ceiling. Do you have any tips on how you can make that a less miserable experience?
Hire it done. Nobody likes painting ceilings, but you know, really, it's don't apply the paint directly under the roller. Buy a longer roller. They sell roller frames in 15-inch lengths and even 18-inch lengths. A lot of garage floor companies will use those, and it gives you a broader application, and so it happens quicker. And really, it's just cover and protection. So you make sure everything's adequately protected, because paint is going to rain down on you.
How are you protecting the walls?
Well, the walls, ideally, if you're going to paint your ceilings, you're doing those first. You always start with the highest surface with respects to the painting applications, and then you work yourself exponentially down. So ceilings first, walls second, and then usually you'll do your baseboards last as a rule of thumb.
Don't have to particularly worry about the wall protection. Just make sure you've got your covered. Now, if we're painting the ceiling, is there a particular roller material you like better that holds paint better and splatters less?
Yes. There's roller covers. Basically, you know, you can buy 100% lamb's wool. The advantage to that is lamb's wool is very absorbent, so it loads up your roller cover with quite a bit of material. And as you're applying that, you're able to get further along in that application or in that respect. And then there's 50-50, which is 50% lamb's wool, 50% polyester. And that is a tighter nap tool that does not stand the paint up when you're doing the back rolling of the product. So I'd say the ceiling, most of the time on ceilings, I would use like a 50-50 cover. It doesn't throw as much paint as typically lamb's wool will.
And I tell people, go ahead and get your painter's hood cover. Go ahead and
put a hat on.
Go ahead and put a hat on. You know, cover yourself up good. Put
get
on
your
long
goggles.
Sleeve.
Yep.
Get your goggles.
Yep.
And I don't only say buy a long-handled roller. I say buy a handle extension that you can screw the roller handle on. Get that extended handle and get it 2 feet away from you.
Right? Yeah. So on 8 or 9 foot ceilings, we use a 4 to 8 foot telescoping, you know, roller handle. And that lets you, you know, make the applications, you know, 6-7 feet away from yourself as you're rolling out that ceiling surface.
Tricks and tips of interior painting with Don Breeze of Rosie on the House Remodeling. We've got Fran has another question for you. But the big question now of all is, okay, now that you've got these rollers that have soaked up all this paint, are they worth cleaning or do you just throw them away?
Drowning in a honeydew list that's driving you crazy? Let Rosie and Romy cut that list down to size. Give us a call now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U. It's the Rosie on the House Show.
College football season.
What time does LSU play today?
All is good. 4 o'clock.
Okay.
4 o'clock.
Is that 4 o'clock New Orleans
Arizona
time?
Arizona time.
Gary says it's 6:30.
6:30 Central time.
6:30 local time, yeah, on ESPN.
Okay, all right.
They moved the game to New Orleans, so the time changed.
Okay, I'm going to check that.
I'm going to have to take a nap to be able to make it to the end of the game now.
That's right. LSU playing BYU. Congratulations to ASU for their win. U of A, I believe, is actually playing Houston. And they've got...
U of A opens with Northern Arizona tonight, and then next week they've got the Houston Cougars.
Okay.
And shall I mention this?
Yes.
Okay. They're doing something really neat for Harvey relief efforts. The Wildcats want to fill an 18-wheeler full of immediate supplies for donations, and we're talking a specific list. So if you go to ArizonaWildcats.com, they will not only tell you what times you can bring the supplies by in the truck, but they'll do that this whole week, and then at the end of the game, they're going to get that 18-wheeler on the road and head to Houston.
Fantastic. Another component of Arizona helping the Harvey flood victims. So let's go to I want to go to Fran, but before I do, Donnie, I was teasing about this hypothetical room we're painting, and we've prepped the baseboard, and we've got it ready for paint, and I want to, and we've talked about painting the ceiling, and now we're coming down. Start high, ceilings first, and you're coming down. If I want to change the color, I want my baseboard to be a contrasting color to the wall. We don't have time to talk about how to paint the wall. We don't have time to talk about anything. How do I make sure it's a nice straight line where the baseboard meets the wall surface?
The easiest way to create a nice, sharp, crisp, straight line between wall and baseboard surface was after your paint on your wall has dried up real good, 24 hours, you can take some masking tape, some blue masking tape, and make a straight line right in that transition between wall, where it cups right into the edge of the baseboard. Make sure that you press that edge down real good. Take a caulking gun, apply some caulking, have a wet rag or a sponge, wipe that caulking real tight, all the excess gone. Paint, go ahead and apply your paint, and then pull that tape when the paint's wet. The reason for that is if you let that caulking dry, oftentimes it'll create a bond and you'll end up pulling, you know, the paint from the baseboard off. So you pull that while it's wet, and you will be just as pleased as punch with the crisp, clean, straight line that you've created there.
Second, great tip of the professionals there. Okay, let's get to Fran real quick because I want to take Fran, and I want to get to two more things here before we finish our conversation on painting. Good morning, Fran. How can we help you, dear?
Hi. A couple of years ago when I bought this house, I hired a painter. He showed me his license number, and I did not check it. But now he was very sloppy. He did no prep work. He has splatters on closet doors. He has overlap. And the kitchen cupboard, the paint is so thick on there, the doors, that I scratch it off around the handle. What can I do now?
That's to remove the rest of the paint that's present, or I'm not sure what the question is, or to touch up
what we may have to do is take Fran after, because there's some other things I want to get to. Fran, you hold on, because cleaning up paint splatters and overruns and drips and all that, kind of, we have to get more specific about what are they on, what cleaning techniques and tricks and tips we're going to use. But I want to go to cleaning up in general. A good paintbrush, just a nice cut in, 2.5 inch tapered, quality brand. You know, you're going to spend $30-$35.
Probably 18-20 at a minimum.
Okay.
Depending on the brush size, and up to 30.
Kill her, Mike. Oh, okay. All right, so you're going to have that paintbrush at a good $20, okay? Mm-hmm. You're going to have some other tools. This roller you were talking about, the lamb's wool 100% in a 1-inch nap, you're going to spend what for that roller cover?
Well, for walls, it would be a 3/4 or a 1/2-inch nap. If it's a textured wall, 3/4. If it's a smooth surface wall or semi-smooth, you'd use 1/2-inch. And you're going to spend about $7-$8 for that roller cover.
Is that roller worth saving, or is it worth going through all the rinsing and the spinning and the water consumption to clean that, or do you just throw it away?
You know, I think when you spend $8 to $10 on a good roller cover, it's going to take you about roughly 5 minutes to completely clean and rinse that out real well. I think that's worth it.
All right. And real quick, how do you store paint? And I mean real quick.
Yeah. If it's a gallon can, you put a sheet of Saran wrap over the top of it, you pound the lid on with a rubber mallet, you turn it upside down, and store it in a cool climate. That'll keep the air from reaching the product, which will help to retard the process of that degrading.
Don Breeze from Rosa on the House Remodeling, educating everybody on painting. And we just barely covered the subject, just barely even scratched the surface. Next week, we'll be talking about painting exterior. And we've got John Eisenhower joining us in the Outdoor Hour. We have no idea what's going to be in the 7 o'clock hour. So join us for the surprise next Saturday morning at Rosie on the House. Y'all have a great week. Be blessed.